Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio, which means you're listening to me, Deb Wolf, debwolf.ca, or Camp Good Dog on Facebook, if you want to check out my dogs playing in the rain. I know I complain a lot about the rain, but some of you are putting up with snow and so much worse. Yes, like our first guest, Jason, calling from Rhode Island or New Jersey. One of the two, because he goes back and forth. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Thank you so much, Deborah. How are you today?
Oh, I'm good. I'm complaining about the rain. They give us a taste of sunshine, and then I just want more. And I keep watching your debates, watching the CNN coverage and the different candidates and the other coverage. And they've been in Florida, which just kills me. It's so sunny there. I want them to go somewhere cold and wet so I don't get so jealous where they are.
They'll be there soon enough.
Okay, good, good. I need to see cold and wet just to feel like I'm not the only one. So you're from Pure and Natural Pets, Pure and Natural's Pet. And, there's so much to ask you about this. Can you tell me a little bit about them for our listeners?
Pure of course. Pure and Natural's Pet is a relatively new company, and it was founded by a bunch of pet lovers, right? We're a bunch of pet parents. And I think what happened was we got discouraged by the products that were available for us to buy for our pets. So, you know, if you look out there, you look at the ingredients, there's so many toxins and chemicals and so many of the pet products that are out there. You know, these are our babies. We love them like our children, our dogs and cats. So we wanted something better for them. And, you know, we started making products not for the world. It was for us. It was for our animals. And our neighbors started to say, hey, can I get that for me? We started getting for our neighbors, and then the community got involved. And by that point, we stopped and said, whoa, I think we have something here. We should share this with the world. And that's really what it's all about for us at Pure Naturals. It's about, you know, giving our pets the same level of care and natural, if you will, that we do for ourselves, right? I mean, you look at the explosion of Whole Foods, and people are getting concerned about what's in their food and what they're putting on their bodies. You know, we have the same concerns about our pets. You know, human market's much more regulated than the pet market is, and that's a shame because, you know, these animals are part of our family.
First I just need to ask you, what kind of dog or cat did you have? What pets were motivating you?
So an English Springer Spaniel named Pebbles has been our dog for a long time. She recently passed, so the kids are getting ready to pick a new one. It's time, but we had to wait a little bit, obviously. We had to mourn Pebbles' passing, but she was really my inspiration for this. She was an amazing dog who was truly one of the family and was great with the kids.
Have you looked on the website rainbowsbridge.com? It's just a poem that people wrote for pet lovers, and it sometimes is really helpful with kids when they lose a pet. So I would suggest that, rainbowsbridge.com. But you can just look up Rainbow Bridge Poem and you'll probably see it. I can't even tell you what it's about without getting choked up. I can't do it. I can't do it on air. So we're going to have to not talk about that. Let's go back to the product. Okay. So USDA certified organic. Oftentimes I see signs on the side of the road as I'm driving. I live in the country and it'll say organic garlic for sale or organic whatever. And I can tell that the farm is right near the highway. How the heck can that possibly be organic? I'm spewing my gas along with everybody else. You know, how do we know what's really organic? And how does the USDA come in on that?
It's a great question. And that was a decision we very consciously made. You know, anytime you bring in a government agency into a business, you know, it gets complicated very quickly. And it gets very serious. And the word natural and organic is bantered around in the industry. It's just thrown around. People say it's all natural. well, there's no regulation on that word. What does it really mean, right? There are a lot of all natural things in the world.
And there's things that are natural that are dangerous for dogs. Grapes are natural, but you don't give it to a dog. Same with chocolate. So natural isn't necessarily the only thing you want to find here, right? There's lots of nasty natural things. Salt, sugar,
It's true for humans, too. Think about it. There's lots of natural things that you would never put on your hair or your body or eat.
That's true.
The word is just thrown around, and it's become relatively meaningless. And we didn't want it to be for us, right? So we took that next step to say, okay, how do we prove to ourselves and to our customers and to the world, in fact, that what we're about to give you really is organic, right? There's no pesticides. There's no dangerous chemicals. It's not just watered down, because water actually is not considered an organic ingredient. Don't know if you knew that. So we went through this whole process with the USDA. We went through this whole process where they validated everything from the farmers who grew the product to the processing of the ingredients to the manufacturing of the product to the bottling to even the labels. So from soup to nuts, if you will, we were overseen and validated. We have a certificate of authenticity. We have a USDA certification certificate saying you have met all the criteria of organic. And it's funny because the word organic is actually regulated pretty heavily in the U.S. There are standards, and people are busted all the time, if you will, for using the word without having gone through the process.
I'm glad to hear that, because I see it used really loosely at the farm markets and flea markets and on the side of the road stands. And I think you got to really use your brain when you see what's going on there. And it's so much easier if it's certified. We're going to come back from break and talk to Jason a little bit more about Pura Naturals Pet. If you want to check it out, puranaturalspet.com is where you go on the break while we listen to a few commercials. And then we'll be back to talk about, okay, what kind of food and how can you get it, and something about foam. We're going to go there. Stay tuned to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm your doggy, and I love you, and you know that I need you too.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and I'm watching a classic romantic dance. I have a golden retriever who's going to come into heat in the next week or two, and she's in a big acreage, big field, fenced-in field, and I can see her. She's with her intended husband. They've never mated before, but he's about six, and a young puppy who's not even a year, his son. And they're doing, nobody's in heat yet. There's no danger that they would mate without me being right there. And Emma's down there watching them, woman who works the kennel, but when I'm on the radio. But she is doing this animated mating dance. Oh my goodness, is she flirting? And they are flirting back. And this is just beautiful to watch. There's so much two legs in the air and flouncing around and chasing and playing. And it's just lovely to see them so playful. So pretty soon I'll have to make sure that she's only with one male, or the males might fight. And then I'll have to supervise her. And then 2 months from now, we'll have some golden doodle puppies. I'll be excited about that. So, okay, back on track with Jason and Pura Naturals Pet. And we were just finding out about the product and what kinds of products you're offering. So we found out that it's USDA certified organic. It came out of a pet lovers group of pet owners and lovers trying to come up with healthy alternatives for kind of whole food eating and smart eating for their pets. I also wanted to ask you, though, because a lot of times it's cheaper to get ingredients from abroad. Are you having to import part of the recipe?
So the answer to that is yes and a no. So we don't do food right now, Deborah. So right now what we're doing is the product offering right now is a full line of bath and body products. So shampoos, leave-in conditioners, powder dry shampoos, a healing balm for older dogs. So it's like an Arnica Salve product, so it relieves aches of joints. There's Paw Rescue, a button nose moisturizer. It's a full line of bath and body products. And in 2 weeks, actually, we'll be at Global Pet Expo launching our full line of hard goods. So there'll be a full line of bedding and bowls, bath accessories, and a lot more, especially stuff made of foam. I know you alluded to it before.
Okay, so what's the deal?
Stuff is coming
Why?
Down the line.
Yeah, it seems like memory foam is what you've got. Why memory foam?
So it's a good question. And what makes the foam special? You kind of asked before, what about this foam? Part of what we're doing is we're trying to source everything we can from the U.S. I would say 95% of the ingredients or materials or foam or anything we're using is everything made in the U.S.A. for sure, and 95% of it is sourced in the U.S.A. as well. We feel really strongly about that, about keeping things in the country. You know, that sense of control you have over creating products that are made here is so much different than something made in China or India. You know, we can go to the factories and watch them make it. We know the quality of what's going into the product. You know, far too often you get things from overseas and all of a sudden ingredients have changed or things have flipped around because it's cheaper to do it one way or the other. You know, we just don't believe in sacrificing, you know, what is now today, because manufacturing in the U.S. is coming back, what is pennies for safety. And we just don't believe in that. But foam is an interesting product because as we started to talk about pet beds, you know, most beds are the same, right? You go out there and look at, out of 100 pet beds, 99 of them are exactly the same. It's cheap petroleum-based foam shoved into a material made in China, and brought over to the U.S. And, in fact, even stuff that says things like handcrafted in the U.S.A., it's like it's another trap, like the word organic. So, you know, we've...
Yeah,
we've
the label was sewn on or something. That's it. One small tiny
bit. The material
bit.
Comes from China. The
repackaged
foam comes from
Mexico. They took out the Chinese directions for use and substituted in the English, and they put it in a new box. And so Now it's made in Canada, or made in America. It's ridiculous how they can get away with it. Sometimes I notice it'll say made in Canada, and the thing itself cannot be grown here in our soil, not with our climate. Right. So how'd they make that in Canada exactly? You know? They didn't. They just reboxed it here. So you gotta use your brain when you're shopping, unfortunately. And most of us don't want to. So what's the memory foam like for a dog? Like, why is this so good?
So it's wonderful for dogs, especially, you know, I told you about Pebbles and how we watched her age and struggle. And most dog beds, you know, don't have that. It's just shredded foam from somewhere in the world, shoved into a mattress and sewn shut. And Pebbles, as she got older, was very achy. You could see it. She'd limp when she got up after laying on the bed for a while. There was no cushioning. There was no relief of pressure points. There was none of that. And I felt really strongly as we started to make these products that, you know, our pets deserve a bed as comfortable as ours. I mean, if you ever laid on your pet bed, and I have laid on my pet's pet bed, probably shouldn't admit to that, it's not comfortable. It's not what it should be. You know, so all of our beds you're going to find are made with shredded memory foam inside of them. So they're soft and pliable and comfortable, and it actually cools your pet. We actually are making some with some heating pads, so actually some of our mattresses will actually warm. So when it's cold in the winter or you have a pet with aches and pains, like we use a heating pad, your pet can have the same kind of experience. And all of it is obviously made in the USA. Our foam is also a little special because, you know, again, we're going for this more natural approach. And you know, foam is a tough business. It's lots of petrochemicals and terrible things and toxins. You know, we went with a very different angle. We actually went out and looked really hard to find a biofoam, a plant-based renewable foam that's non-toxic. It's wonderful. And it took us a long time to find it, but it's one of our, in my opinion, key selling features, a totally non-toxic bio-based foam. And it's very exciting for us that we'll be able to introduce this to the market because you don't see a lot of it out there. Is it a little more expensive? Absolutely. But you know, it's something we actually don't even pass on to the consumer. You'll find our bedding prices are right in line with the market, and it's just better stuff.
Okay, so we've been talking to Jason from PuraNaturalsPet.com. PuraNaturalsPet.com. And Jason, would you like to tell them how they can get a hold of you or get your products? Because we only have a couple minutes left.
Absolutely. Our products are certainly available on Amazon if you search for Pura, P-U-R-A, NaturalsPet.com. Or Pure Naturals Pet on Amazon. You can come to our website and we show you a map of where you can buy them in your local stores. And that's probably the best way to get them right now. you know, hopefully in the future.
And can I see your whole line if I go to the website? Can I see, like, maybe I have a dog with a particular skin problem or issue or allergy? Can I look at what you got there?
Absolutely. It's all available at purenaturalspet.com.
Okay, nice. So all you out there getting ready for spring and summer, thinking the hot spots are inevitable, it's time to look at this website, get preventative before it happens to you, the itchy, scratchy explosion we all know is seasonal. A lot of you wheat and terrier people, you know what I'm talking about. Same for you, pugs with the yeast. Oh, yeah, you need to get on it. Prevention is way better than having to treat it after. But even if you catch it late, sometimes creams, ointments, vitamins, and a decent bed can do a lot for a pet who's suffering from skin problems. Okay, everybody, thank you very much for joining us today, Jason. And everyone, stay tuned. We'll be back on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, with me, Deb Wolf.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love you.
And you know that
you
I really do.
I really do.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and we're going to be talking with Joy Turner in just a moment. If you want to check her out ahead of time, talkwithyouranimals.com, talkwithyouranimals.com. Makes me want to start singing that intro to Dr. Doolittle's theme song, to talk with your animals. Yes, I want to talk with my animals, and everybody listening to this show wants to talk with their animals. Have you had an animal that was sick or unhappy or wouldn't eat or just seemed out of sorts, and you're like, but why? Just tell me what you want. Yeah, well, that's what Joy does. Welcome to the show, Joy.
Thank you very much for having me, Deb.
It's nice to have you. Once in a while, animals will talk to me, and it sometimes is, you know, I'm skeptical. So like one time there was this dog on the road and I stopped and I told my kids to stay in the car and I went over to the dog and of course my kids got out of the car and followed me over and I called the SPCA and I was reading them the information off the tag and there was no name and I said to my kids, well, what do you think this dog's name is? And they started guessing and I was on hold with the SPCA. They were looking him up and I said, I know he doesn't look like Bear, but he's telling me his name is Bear. And my kids are saying, he doesn't look like a bear. There's no way. His name must be Spot. You know, lady comes back on. The dog you have there is Bear. You know, it was just like, okay, he said so. But most of the time, it's not so clear, right? I've got a 13-year-old standard poodle who's a very finicky eater. I can give him yogurt. I can give him meat. I give him different variety. I mix it up all the time. Sometimes I pretend it's mealtime when it's not because he's quite old. He'll forget and eat an extra meal. Can you help me figure out what would make him eat more and maybe be more comfortable? He seems really, really happy with his life. Very active.
Why don't you tell me
his
name?
His name is Vegas, and he's a standard poodle, and he's 13. And he's too thin, and I try, but he's too thin.
He's funny in my head. He jumped in going, hi, very loud. And he's so
silly.
Pleased to be doing this. And he says, you know, he's just like old people.
Yeah.
Sometimes we like different things, and sometimes we don't want anything. He doesn't think there's anything wrong with what he's eating or how much he's eating or what he weighs.
You know, the vet keeps telling me he's older than a standard poodle should be, and he looks great, and don't worry about it. But he is really, really thin. So, okay, I'm glad you said that. Now, Scarlett. The new girl in town, the golden retriever, is she happy? And I don't want to tell you too much about her, so maybe you could tell me what's going on with her.
Well, are there symptoms or something you want me to ask her about?
Well, she's supposed to come into heat very soon and have her first litter. She's now 3 years old. She's a golden retriever. And she should be having golden doodles, but it's the first time, you know, so I'm curious what her thinking is. Does she know what's about to happen? Is she excited?
She says, well, she thinks you're more excited than she is.
Yes.
She's doing this because you want her to, not because
okay.
she necessarily feels compelled to have babies.
Well, she's never
she's
done
happy
it before.
To do it to please you.
Okay, well, she's never done it before, so she probably doesn't know how great it's going to be. I'm hoping she really enjoys it.
She's thinking that she should give you good babies, but she thinks it won't be really soon. Not as soon as you were thinking.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. And she loves her husband, doesn't she? I mean, she seems to. She seems to love him more than he loves her.
She's
Noodle
totally
is her
stuck
husband.
On him, she says.
What?
She's totally stuck on him, she says.
Oh, it's a major crush. She just won't. Yes. From the moment she got here, she just has eyes for him. Now, there's another young male who has eyes for her. So it's a bit of a love triangle. It's quite funny to watch.
She says she really doesn't have the time of day for the younger guy.
That's right.
But she is like glued to her mate. Oh.
If anybody wants to see the younger guy, Teddy, who's a red standard poodle puppy, harassing Scarlett to make her play with him, you could see him actually grabbing a hold of her tail and her smiling and indulging him. And they're about the same color. They're both red. And they're on our Facebook site at Camp Good Dog. It's a beautiful picture caught in action of just how bratty a young puppy could be and how tolerant a playful young dog will be. You can't expect older dogs to put up with this stuff, but young dogs who love each other, they'll put up with a lot of rough and tumble. Okay, so I wonder who else I should ask you about. I have a whole whack of customers and clients, dogs and cats. What do you ever do readings for people who've lost pets to try and find them?
I do. I do lost animals. I get a lot of calls, and I have clients all around the world, but most of my sessions are done either over the phone because they're not physically by me or through Skype. So I get a lot of calls about transitions in animals' lives, like if they're sick. What kind of treatments do they want? Here's what the vet says it is, or what's hurting you? What can I tell the vet to try to help you? I also get a lot of calls about life transitions, like if people think their animals are at the end or close to the end of their life, what they want to do, when they might want to leave, that kind of thing.
It's very hard to make that decision. You know, people decide, they say, okay, well, as long as he's eating and drinking and walking and playing and not in any pain, everything's good. And then the dog stops walking. So they go, well, he's still eating and drinking and not, and the line moves and moves and moves. And you really want your pet to tell you, don't you?
When you know, people do. They just really feel bad about guessing whether it's time or what they should do for treatment. So I really feel like what I offer people is very valuable to them, so it can give them peace of mind. It's the same reason I talk with animals who have crossed over, because so many people are feeling guilty that they let them go too late or they made them leave too soon or whatever the case may be. And I rarely have ever found an animal that feels like their human did something wrong.
You know what? In my experience running this kennel and the customer base that I have, which is pretty huge, I've only experienced people who regretted not doing it sooner. When they finally make that decision and euthanize the pet, I don't think I've ever had a single person who said, I should have waited a day more. You know, we really go long on it. And so do these pets say, like, please tell him it's time? Or what do they say to you?
Well, it depends. It's all an individual thing. They will actually say, I'm not ready to leave yet. Some of them say they don't really care what it looks like, because there's a lot from a spiritual perspective. There's a lot of learning that a soul does during the transition of from when they're well to when they pass, if they get sick. So they don't want to cut that learning short a lot of times. Sometimes they say, yes, I'm ready. Please tell them as soon as they can get to a place where they can let me go, let me go.
I want to ask you one more thing about Scarlett the Red Golden. What would make her get along better, not be so reactive to the older dogs in the house, the dogs that aren't her intended mates, that aren't rough and tumble? What would make her a little more easygoing with them?
Well, she thinks you have a problem about that because she doesn't see she's not easygoing. So tell me a behavior she does so I can ask her about a specific behavior.
Growling at the spayed female dogs, growling at them. Pushing over the neutered male dog.
She goes, oh, I do those things. So part of her problem is she's young enough, she doesn't understand what is supposed to be acceptable behavior and what isn't in that kind of a situation. So one of the things you can do to help her is speak with her slowly. Think about as many pictures about what you're saying as you can. And say what you do want instead of what you don't want, because there's no picture in our mind for the word not. So whenever
you
say don't do something, we're showing them a picture of doing what we don't want them to do.
Absolutely. Oh, that's so well spoken. Okay, everybody, we absolutely have to go to break, unfortunately. So we've been talking to Joy Turner. She's in Seattle, near me in Vancouver. But you can reach her, talkwithyouranimals.com. You don't have to be in Seattle, talkwithyouranimals.com. Joy Turner, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's been great.
You know, I'll give Scarlett some more guidance. She's just a little bit rude. And I think she's so, so sweet. So I'm glad you kind of reconfirmed that for me. All right, everyone. If you need to talk to your animals, look for Joy Turner, talkwithyouranimals.com. And stay tuned with me on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love you.
And you know that
you
know I really do.
I really do.
To Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And our engineer and our guest are making me laugh because we are going through the dog body with Becky Starr. We have covered all kinds of parts, the ears and this and that. And fortunately for us, today's topic, we still have some clean body parts left. We will be talking about the eyes. We knew we were two round objects and I was getting worried, but nope. It is the eyes. So welcome to the show, Becky.
Hello, everybody. Nice to be here, as always. It's always a happy day for me.
Well, you know, a while back on this show, Dr. Carol Osborne was my guest, and we did go in depth about the other two round identical objects that are only in appearance on certain male dogs. And she told me they have fake ones now. Plus, since doing
Yeah,
nudicles. And then, so they're fake testicles. And then since doing that show, I actually met a dog with them. You never saw a dog get so much attention at the dog park. Every dog wants to sniff them and check them out and wonder why these things smell so funny. So the poor dog is kind of tormented. I almost think it's better to just leave it. But then they came out with this injectable, neutering injectable, which to me was just so dangerous and devious. I could see, you know, ruthless competitors making their rivals, you know, at a dog show, unable to, it was just terrifying for me. You couldn't tell a neutered dog from an unneutered dog anymore. And that's all very worrying. But we're not talking about that today. No.
Well, you know, I actually have worked with both of those clients on the balls. I've actually seen the little nudicles, and I've known him for many years. So, yes, it's about all about ego, and most of the male people end up choosing to put the fake ones in to make them still feel manly man.
Well, and they go with big ones, which is just so silly. It's like, you know, oh my God, like a trophy thing. It's just so silly. So, so silly. And it doesn't fool the dogs at the dog park, not for a second. Okay, so Becky, let's talk about the eyes. Let's do that. What did you want to tell people about eyes today?
Well, you know, there's an old saying, the eyes are the windows to the soul, right? And for us really big, giant pet lovers out there, we know exactly what that means. Because when those eyes look up at us, they tell you a story. You know, every emotion, feeling, thought. And they can really tell you how they feel, if they're the way they look at you. And I know with my own dog, I can wake up in the morning and I can look at him and go, ooh, his eyes are dull today. I can tell exactly how my dog feels just by looking in their eyes. And when you get used to what their eyes look like, you know, when they're happy and vivacious and alive, you can tell a difference. At the same time, the eyes, more than any other part of the body, are pretty obvious when there's a problem. And sooner or later, it's one of the most common problems that, you know, as pet owners have to deal with. The thing is about the eyes, there's so many possibilities, right, when it comes to eye health, from something simple as, you know, to something in their eye or a trauma or an injury, but it can also lead to, you know, very serious diseases. And so it's important for us to be alert and aware of what we're watching for and to be able to avoid potential serious permanent damage to their eyes.
You know what else? To make sure you're not treating something as a cosmetic issue that's actually a health issue. Because there's so much stuff in the pet store for dark stains or runny eyes or red eyes. But you might have a problem you're now masking that you really, that was like the early warning sign, right?
That's right. Because sometimes eye diseases can be a secondary issue to another health problem, even to distemper, diabetes, sinus, upper respiratory problems, teeth infection. So it's important to know that it's not just something on the surface that it's usually being caused from another health problem.
Oh, you know what else? I once saw pyometria, which is a very serious infection of the female parts in a non-spayed dog. I once saw that diagnosed through runny, goopy eyes. That was their first clue. And then they went on the detective route, right? And they saved that dog. But if they just masked the eye symptom, maybe they would have kept breeding her. Maybe, who knows what would have happened. Bad, though.
That's right. So the first thing you want to do is, you know, I love that saying, look into my eyes, right? So today, what everybody needs to do is to look into their dog's eyes. Put your pet in a brightly lit area so you can really see well. And the eyes should always be clear and bright, and the area around the eyeball should be white. The pupils should be equal in size. There should be no tearing, no discharge, no crust. The other thing you can do is gently roll down your dog's lower eyelid and look at the lining. It should be pink, it not red, not white. So if your dog has all the perfect, clean, clear, happy eyes, that's what you begin with. Of how your dog's eyes look when they're healthy. And then you can tell easily when anything's amiss. The other thing really good to do is to do a little research and find out if your pet breed is predisposed toward any eye conditions, because there's many breeds that are. And this will put you on alert.
Oh, can we go through a few of them? I think it's mostly Pishtun face dogs and small dogs, but am I wrong about that? Is there a few that I'm not thinking about?
You know, there's so many. I mean,
oh, really?
Literally,
okay.
There's so many different diagnoses and technical terms. You know, that it can range from small dog to big dog to medium dog, and from, you know, just as a idea of how many, you know, whether it's cataracts or cintia, abnormal eyelids, they have collie eye defects. There's droopy eyes. There's blood in the eyes. There's congenital. There's ulcers. There's
yes. And you know what? There's also the things that come with your climate. So
yes.
A Cocker Spaniel with its droopy eyes running through a field that's just been seeded with grass is an invitation for one of those little seed pods to get trapped in the lower eyelid and maybe start sprouting and give that dog a heck of a problem. So you got to really look at where you're going and what you're doing and grooming after, cleaning after. Look in your dog's eyes after you've been through a field and it's been running in the tall grass, you know, because the stuff can get in there, right?
Yeah, and many times it's as simple as that. I keep around a little bottle of natural tears. You can get it at any drugstore, and there's nothing harmful in it. And like what you're saying, I live on the beach. I walk my dog out in the sand, and he's a Boston Terrier, and he has kind of bulgy, big, stick-out eyes. And I'm telling you, every little sand grit just jumps right in there. And I know that the minute we get off that beach, I have my little tube of natural tears in my pocket, and I rinse out his eyes. Because that grit, you know, little sand grit can actually scratch the cornea and, you know, cause much bigger problems. So it's the same as you with cattails and, you know, all these things that get stuck in their eyes on walks in the park and hikes in the hills. It's always good to just kind of rinse out their eye after you've been outside somewhere with something you feel comfortable with. Or even, you want to be careful, like, rubbing with a nice warm wash rag, you know, because you might end up scratching the eye if something's in there, you know. So you just kind of take warm water and rinse it through. But I'm in the habit of doing that because I can see things. Where a lot of people, when they don't have a dog with kind of big, bulgy eyes, they can't see
it. It's hidden. You know what? We've run out of time. We only have a minute left. Becky, can you tell them how to get your magazines and where to look for you?
Yeah, they can contact you.
Okay, there you go. DebWolf.ca. or Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And you can get a dog magazine, cat magazine, vet mag, all kinds of magazines, a year's subscription for free. And they're the best magazines. And that's because Becky's our guest. So thank you for joining us, Becky.
Okay, you too. Take care, everybody.
All right, everyone. Stay tuned. We'll be back with a walk on the cat side with Dusty Rainbow. Stay tuned to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me, Dumb Wolf.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love you.
And you know that
you know
I need
you
too.
I really do.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and we are talking with Dusty Rainbold, and I promise you cat content, and here she is telling me she wants to talk about, I don't know, a shrimp? What's going on with you, Dusty?
A really, really, really old shrimp. It's fabulous. I was reading...
Can I eat it?
Huh?
Can I eat it?
It might hurt your teeth. This one is about 520 million years old, and it's kind of a shrimp-like little crustacean that they found in southern China. But the cool thing, it's a fossil, of course, but the cool thing is it's so well preserved that they actually were able to see the individual nerve fibers.
Wow, so this is like the oldest creature for that to be true, isn't it?
Well, I don't know that they've ever seen actual nerves before in a fossil. So here it is, a little shrimp-like crustacean, and they actually see the detailed nervous system. And they published something about it in the National Academy of Sciences this month. So
okay. So since we promised them cat content,
yes.
And I know it's not directly related, but
cats
I see
like
all the
shrimp.
Time, the cat food bags, they say meat, they say chicken, they say turkey, some of them say seafood. Are cats meant to eat seafood?
Well, there are some recent studies that say seafood, fish may be associated with the amount of hyperthyroidism we're seeing in cats now. And, of course, a couple of studies don't mean yes, but...
If you see a stray cat or a colony that lives near the ocean, you see them picking for clams and all that kind of stuff during low tide. So you would think that it would be okay for them. But is that just because they got no other options? Mice would really be better?
Well, they are made to eat mice and lizards and birds and snakes. But cats are opportunists, so they're going to eat whatever's available. And, you don't, with the exception of the cat actually called the fishing cat and maybe the Turkish van, it's not necessarily a natural diet for cats. And I will admit that since I've read this study, I seem to have a lot of hyperthyroidism in my cats. And I don't know if it's because my cats just live a really, really, really long time, or if it's because I have, up until now, fed a lot of fish. So the fish has stopped, and we'll see in about 10 years. If my youngsters don't have it, then we'll have something.
A few weeks back, I kept getting emails about this What Dog Are You app. People asking me to try it and comment on it on the air. So I want to let you know, listeners, I tried it. I tried it with myself, and I tried it with my daughter, and I submitted 5 pictures for each of us, and each picture had a different result. So it's fun to do, but it's really not telling you what dog you are. It's more telling you, in that picture, with that hairstyle, on that day, you look most like this dog picture that they have. It's still fun, though. So thank you for sending that to me, everybody, but it's not going to give you the solution to what kind of dog personality you really are. But if you ask your best friends and maybe someone who doesn't like you, you probably come up with a character description, maybe point form, 10 traits, and then you can find out. Is it high energy? difficult to get along with, learns fast, or is it easygoing? You can find out what kind of dog you are just by getting to know your friends a little better. You don't need the app, but if you want to have some fun, it is fun. So, Dusty, I asked you before the break if you'd ever had anybody use bloodhounds to find a cat, and that's because there's someone in Whistler who lost their golden, I think it was a golden doodle, and they lost it for 5 weeks. It came back thin and unwell, and they tried everything. $5,000 reward, posters, private eyes, bloodhounds. Eventually, someone found it and called them. So that's good. But did you ever have a bloodhound find a cat that was lost?
No, I didn't. I had a my blind cat was accidentally let out by the cable guy. And what got him back was the fact that I'm tenacious like a dachshund, which I think would be my dog.
Okay.
But I put out lots and lots of signs, and I went out and called the cat at 3 in the morning multiple days. And it was actually calling him at 3 in the morning that brought him back. But the difference between the Labradoodle and my cat is cats generally don't go very far from their house. Most cats only go 2, 3, 4 houses away in kind of a circular pattern. So, you know, they may be 400 feet, whereas a dog tends to go just wander. And
the three in the morning thing, is that because there's no other noises competing? Is that what that's about?
I believe that that has a great deal to do with it. It's calm. You know, cats do like to hunt at night on occasion. I mean, you know, some prefer morning and dusk. But, you know, they feel safe at night. They can see at night. And some guy, stranger on the psychic pet line or pet site, emailed me and said, call your cat at 3 in the morning. And I wrote him back and said, are you a pet psychic? And he said, no, that's how my girlfriend got her cat back. And all these psychics were saying, oh, he's dead. He's gone to the Rainbow Bridge. And so I did what the guy who wasn't psychic said and got him back. And the third day that I went out and called at 3 in the morning, I heard him. And it was two more days before I got him back. Other things I did was I would take contents from the litter box and do trails all over the neighborhood so that he could follow the scent back.
Well, this is a blind cat. I mean, gosh, that's harder, right? It's going to be more fearful, more likely to hide, less likely to go to strangers. So it's a whole other ball of wax. The other thing is, and I know we're getting near the end of the segment, but I think sometimes people don't realize I had this one cat, Orca, and when I had work done on the house, she disappeared and just became completely feral. No one could get near her. She, for all intents and purposes, she was a totally wild cat. I actually got a live trap from the Spay and Neuter Society I was a volunteer with, and I trapped her as if she was a live, you know, feral animal. I brought her in my house in this trap, and the moment we opened the trap, she was back in the house. And it was like everything clicked together, and she was the pet cat we'd always had. She went from not willing to come anywhere near us outside at the neighbor's shed to completely in our arms, purring like she'd never left. Something about being thrown outside made her go quite wild. But the second she was home again, she was back. No problem. That's a little odd for us humans to understand. Like, why won't she come to me? She's my cat, right?
Well,
she might not.
If you think about it, she has to... They have to revert back to that, because if they don't, they're going to get eaten or they're going to get hit by a car.
And even though sometimes I think people give up. They say, well, she's not going to come to me. I guess she's gone feral. No, not necessarily. She's doing what she needs right then, right?
She is scared to death. It took me 3 weeks to get BK back, and BK stands for Blind Kitty. He could obviously hear me. He hadn't gone very far, but he was too afraid to approach me. And I will say, when I finally saw him, he can see shadows. That's all he can see. And I actually got down on my stomach and called him so that he wouldn't see something high above him. He would see something on his level. And he finally approached me, and I grabbed him and threw him in the house. And he had lost a lot of weight, but he was still alive. And 3 weeks later, I still found him.
Wow. So, okay, so we talked about bloodhounds finding cats or missing dogs. They tried it with this golden doodle. The bloodhounds didn't work. But now, for $200 to $400, and I want to ask you, Dusty, would you do this? You can hire a drug-searching dog to search your teenager's room. How do you like that one?
You know what? If I had a teenager, I might do that. I don't have a teenager. I don't have kids. But I do. I have nieces
and nephews.
Isn't that something?
I remember when I was a teenager, one of my siblings, I won't say which, had a case for an instrument, a band instrument. This person was no longer in the band, and the case came in very handy. I don't know. I think the dog would have ratted that one out.
Yep. So I can't say I wouldn't. I would be very worried about kids these days. So, yeah, I might hire a drug dog.
I think I would hire a sniffing dog if I was missing one of my animals nearby. But it's how do you find them fast? How do you get them on the trail fast? And I don't know. You see those posters. I see them all the time. The little cockapoo face, the little Havanese face posted in the middle of a 15-acre forest, you know, in hundreds and hundreds of acres, but like on a tree, surrounded by forest, missing dog. And you think, oh, no. So many things out here want to eat that little thing, right? It's just, so what's the best advice if your dog or cat goes missing? I guess posters up as fast as you can. Is that
call animal
really
control immediately. As soon as you go, I'm not sure. What, even if you're not sure if the animal has really disappeared, call animal control immediately. Call animal controls in your area. Don't just call the city you're in, because cats can get in car engines. Little puppies can get in moving vans. Somebody can.
Well, dogs travel far. Dogs travel really far, especially during thunderstorms, because they some dogs will just keep moving. They'll just keep moving and keep moving and keep moving till the storm's over. And they find themselves like two towns over, completely confused. And sometimes it's kind of weird, but I have a commercial dog kennel, and because so many dogs, the owners park in the driveway and then they walk down and they sort of, you know, lift their leg on the way down. I get dogs showing up here after thunderstorms that have, you know, escaped their chains or their homes, and they're running around the neighborhood and they don't know where to go, but they smell dog. So they come, they'll be sitting by the gate sometimes after a really bad thunderstorm. So I think ID and tags is really important. Even if your dog's microchipped, not everybody has the reader, but from a distance, if they see it's tagged, especially if your dog looks like something that could be wild, like a shepherd cross, coyote cross, a stray mutt. If it isn't obviously a foo-foo-owned dog, and most dogs aren't obviously a foo-foo-owned dog after they've been running around in the mud for a week, you know, people aren't going to want to touch it unless they're sure it's owned. So you want that tag, that collar to show up. You want it to look like a pet out of place in the woods, right?
Last week, there was the most gorgeous German Shepherd. He was big and bulky and beautiful. I would not go near him. He obviously didn't belong on the street. I called animal control. I don't know if they ever found him or not, because he acted like he was on a mission. He was going somewhere, but I was too fearful to approach him.
Oh my gosh, Dusty, you may have seen The Littlest Hobo. He's a mythical dog that exists. There's a TV show about him, and he goes from town to town helping people. I think you saw him. He's sometimes a husky, sometimes a German Shepherd, and he goes around helping kids mostly. The Littlest Hobo, Canadian tradition. You might have seen him in the flesh. Well, okay, maybe not. But, you do your dog a big favor if you make him look owned. And sometimes if your dog's a sweet, sweet dog, but he has the look of a nasty dog, maybe he's all black, and if you don't know him, he could look tough. Or maybe he has a pit bull cross look, even though he's really a boxer. You know, you get tired of explaining it to everybody. Stick a fluorescent pink collar with a bow on that dog. Now you don't need to do your explaining anymore. Everybody sees how cute it is, and they go, aren't you cute with your bow? And your dog wags its tail, because people are reacting differently to it already. And dogs are like mirrors. They mirror back what you're giving out. So make your dog look sweet somehow, even if it's a tough dog, and it'll get treated sweeter and it'll behave more sweetly. It just It's a chain reaction. So no stud collars on the pit bull. That's not the way to go if you want people to like it and want it around. Okay, so what else can they do if the pet goes missing, Dusty?
Put signs up immediately. As a matter of fact, I think it's a really good idea because you never know when it's going to happen. You know, like I said, the cable guy accidentally let my cat out. Have something pictures ready to go. Have a picture. Mm-hmm. Have a little poster put together. And that way, if the animal goes missing, you can put posters out there immediately. One thing I did when BK went missing, I bought clear shelf paper, the plastic stuff, and I enclosed the poster around this stuff. It cost, you know, a couple of bucks a roll. And my posters lasted until I found him. Even when it rained, I didn't have to go replace mm-hmm. them.
And I find the local shelters, they're very helpful, but sometimes they don't know what they have. Years and years ago when I ran a doggy daycare service and dog walking service in Vancouver, one of my customers called me. They had lost their Bichon Frise. And the reason was they had a special needs child in the home. And the special needs child had walked the dog to the park and then just sort of forgotten and let go mm-hmm. of the leash and walked home. Okay, so now it turns out what happened with this dog was another special needs child took the dog. And then she forgot about it, and eventually it ended up at the SPCA. The reason they couldn't find it when they called the SPCA was because they kept calling for a white Bichon Frise. This dog was so filthy when it came in, so filthy that it was not white and not recognizable as a Bichon Frise. And that, this is a, you know, come on. Really?
I had a
really?
Similar situation.
It happens.
I had a similar situation. I found a Van Pattern cat sitting in the middle of the road, and I caught her and put her in the car, and I called animal control. She didn't have a microchip. I happened to have a microchip scanner with me. Didn't have a microchip. And I told them that I would not surrender the cat to them, but I filed a report and said the owner could call me. She obviously belonged to somebody. Well, I called two or three times, and then a week later, I called and said, has anybody called for this dog? Oh, well, somebody came by today. This person had called three times, and they told him that nobody had reported their cat when I had on several occasions called. And so if you find a cat or if you find a pet, if you've lost a pet, go by there. You have to go by animal control.
Yes, look.
Eyeball the animals.
Oh, and so it's so important when you're talking about cats especially, because gray and white, tabby, beige, tabby, Siamese, cross, oh my gosh, they don't know what they got in there. Go look.
That's exactly right. And it wasn't until they actually pulled the log and saw that I had called on several occasions that they went, oh, well, this lady may have it. Well, as a matter of fact, this was the owner. He came to my home. The cat immediately recognized him and was meowing and rubbing his feet. But if both he and I hadn't been persistent, it wouldn't have happened.
And a lot of cats end up getting euthanized or homeless,
exactly.
And there is an owner out there looking. They just don't put the two together. It's really, I mean, it's almost like one of those mind puzzles, matching the cat in the picture to the cat that's missing to the cat in the kennel. They really do all look alike sometimes. So
well, and
it's
like
pretty
said,
hard, and they change.
The family
like,
may think that a calico marking is a tabby or a tabby marking. People don't know what they have. So you
well,
have
and the weight,
to
too.
Look.
You lost a 20-pound cat. This one's only 12 pounds, but that could be because he had 6 months with no food and living off his avails. You know, like, it could be the same guy, though, right? And
exactly.
He may have had beautiful, long, thick coat the last time you saw him, but he doesn't anymore. They shaved him a while back, right? Like, you know, so you just got to go. You'll know your cat. You'll know your dog. Okay, so I had an interesting.
You cannot give up. I know
sorry.
A lady, it took her 6 months of looking, and she finally found her cat at a shelter 6 months after he disappeared. So just because he's not there today or tomorrow, you know, keep looking. Go at least every two or three days.
Okay. So I was on Facebook, and I noticed from Stacey Mantle, PetsWeekly.com magazine that I check out online, Pets Weekly, she was complaining about her cat. She had a picture of her cat complaining that she's trying to get her cat to do tricks, and it just won't do tricks. And she's got the treat ready, and it's looking at her like, I don't work for treats. So what I typed her, and I'm just going to run this past you, make sure I didn't give her any bad advice, because I train cats too, but not like you do. So, okay, so this is what I said. I said, give her that treat she is demanding and yearning for, but just a taste. Then make the trick you ask her to perform one she does automatically and willingly, like reach with her paw. An easy and quick trick. Say paw, cause her to reach, and give her a bigger piece. Treat reward as you praise and pet her. Now walk away. If she follows you, repeat. And then I said, and that's how I would train a cat, but I'm just a dog trainer. I'll check it out with Dusty. So, Dusty, how do you train a cat to do tricks?
I agree with 100% of what you said, but I'd like to add a caveat.
Okay.
With cats especially, it has to be a high-value treat. Just because the person thinks that the cat should want this treat doesn't necessarily mean they do. I've had the best luck with baby food, sticking my finger in baby food.
Ooh.
and make sure that it is like a check the label, make sure it doesn't contain onions or garlic. But turkey baby food, second meats, I think is what it's called, and I have cats generally can't resist that. Either that or I buy boar's head low sodium turkey, and I cut it into pieces that are smaller than a pea. You don't want to fill them up.
Well, that's the trick, right? And to stop. The bit about walk away, and if the cat doesn't follow, you're finished. That's it. You can't just keep training because you want to.
The cat has to be high value enough where the cat's going to want to. And you know what? Exactly. When they say it's done, you don't want to force them to continue. It's like, okay, game's over. It needs to be a game. It needs to be fun. My kitty, Einstein, and her brother, Herman, will actually come up to me and jump up on the platform. And it's like, is it time to learn yet? They want it.
You know, I had a cat I used for cat food ads, Western Family cat food ads years ago. And with him, I remember, now I kind of feel guilty, but given what you said about fish and seafood and problems, but I used to use smoked salmon. Decadent as that was, he was paid really well for that work. So I figured he'd earned it. But he got smoked salmon.
But that's different because it's a treat. It's not his primary diet. So I don't think that that's a big deal at all.
I got smoked salmon too those days. We were sharing the set. Absolutely. Craft table. Got to raid the craft table for the kitty. Anyway, okay, so let's leave them with something today. It's Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Me, Deb Wolf, dubwolf.ca or Camp Good Dog on Facebook. And we are talking with Dusty Rainbolt. And are you still collecting elimination stories, Dusty?
Yes, I am. My book is going to be going to press in about 2 months. So, yes, if you want to send me stories about how you overcame elimination issues, I'd love to hear them. If you are having
issues, you've got to translate that. If your cat didn't pee or poo in the litter box, if it was doing it somewhere it's not supposed to,
yes.
Dusty wants to hear about it. Not me, Dusty.
That's
so how
right.
do they reach you, Dusty?
They can reach me at dustycatwriter.com. That's DustyCatWriter, all one word, dustycatwriter.com. I mean, dustycatwriter@pobox.com. And my book will be out on the 1st of June, so if you are having elimination problems, you can look for Cat Scene Investigator, Solve your Cat's Litter Box Mystery.
I joke about it, but really it is the number one problem. It's like dog
it
won't
is.
Come, dog won't heal, dog jumps up. This one, cat won't use the litter box. Number one problem. It's not something you have to just live with. It's not something that's not unchangeable. So if you've just resigned yourself to some stained, horrible carpet in the bathroom,
we can help you, right, Dusty? You can call us when we're on the show. You can send me your email. I said I didn't want to hear your stories, but really I do. Because I want to help you. Because you don't have to live with that, right, Dusty?
That's right. That's right. And that's what this whole book is about. It's just full of suggestions for helping your cat overcome the problem. Because it may actually not be the cat's problem. And the first thing you need to do if your cat starts eliminating someplace besides the litter box is take him to the vet, because the sudden refusal to use the litter box is very often a cry for help and the first symptom of illness. So,
and, you know, if nothing dramatic changed, if you didn't move, there's no new cat in the house, if all of a sudden your cat just isn't using, get it to the doctor. It probably has something really treatable and simple if you deal with it now. But if you get it onto a bad habit and then later discover it's a medical problem, now it comes home healthy with a bad habit that's entrenched. So really, get on it now, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
They say it takes 6 weeks to 3 months to get a dog, you know, avoiding the bad habit and practicing the new habit. 6 weeks to 3 months, which to me sounds really, really easy. Like when I think of a human who smokes cigarettes, there's no way they could easily, like, that's fast, right? To kick a habit. What about a cat? How long till a cat kicks a habit?
Well, the behaviorists that I've spoken to have said that you want to keep the cat away from the area that they've been soiling for 3 to 4 weeks. So,
okay.
So I'm thinking, I mean, longer mm-hmm. is better. The longer the cat is kept out of an area, the longer you're encouraging this good behavior, the better. But I would think at least a month, at least a month.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Dusty. It's been great as always. I love talking to you.
Oh, well, I enjoy it too, and love hearing from your listeners, and look forward to speaking with everybody again soon.
Thanks, Dusty. Okay, everyone, from Smart Animal Talk and me, Deb Wolf, and Dusty Rainbolt, until next week, be good to your animals.
And anytime you're near.